It's Keith Tomasek, and you're listening to The Inadequate Life, a podcast about the creative process and people whose lives depend upon it. On today's show, Anna Atkinson. Anna's a multi-instrumentalist, a singer, and a songwriter, and you've probably seen her on the stages at Stratford if you've been there in the last 3 years. Anna joins me to talk about her singing and songwriting process, and most recently she's at Rundle's, one of the finest restaurants in Stratford. If you just Google Rundle's, you'll be able to find her, and she's doing part of the musical brunch series. Every Saturday and Sunday, she's at Rundle's playing her songs, and you can get an amazing dinner. It's a package thing. Susie and I went and had a fabulous time, and Anna, her voice is much more mature than her years. When I did the interview with her, I hadn't really heard her perform live before. I'd listened to some of her stuff on CD and so forth. But seeing her live in that room gave me just a new appreciation for her really fabulous voice. And again, if you've seen her at Stratford, you might have seen her in Fiddler on the Roof, where she's playing the fiddle, but really didn't get to use her voice, which is probably her best instrument. So that's coming up in a little bit. Before I do that, if I don't know if you follow me on Twitter or Facebook or not, but I had an amazing experience with Cole. We entered a contest, Mervish, you know, the folks in Toronto, Mervish Productions. They put together a contest, and it was a great idea for a theater contest for young people, by the way. It was enter your name, and you can become a junior reporter for the show Earth's Dinosaur Zoo, which is a spectacular show from Australia. There are these large dinosaur puppets, and you really just forget they're puppets. So the dinosaurs are entrancing and scary, and it's just a great theatrical experience. So Cole and I entered a contest, and he won. So he got to be a junior reporter for the opening. Great idea if you run a theater or are looking for some sort of promotions. So we got free tickets to the show. After the show, we got to go backstage with the director. He was so kind and generous. It was really just a great event for Cole. He's only 7, going backstage. And then, this is the cool part, he had to write a review. And I really didn't know what to expect, because he's never really written a review before for a show. He's aware of them because of my website, Stratford Festival Reviews. So I just sat him down in the counter at the kitchen, and I was in the next room just working on the computer and kind of expressed to him what he needed to do. And I was so impressed. The little guy put together a really cool little review, and you can find it on Stratford Festival Reviews if you just type in dinosaur under the search tab on the left-hand side. Except it was so funny. I did ask him to use it felt like, the word it felt like. Just start a sentence, Cole, because you know how kids write. And this happened, and this happened, and this happened. So I went back and got back to work, and he came up with the sentence, when the lights went down, it felt like I was in a jungle, which I loved, because I didn't get that feeling when I was there. But there were a lot of jungle-type things, and the graphics and images behind the artists and the dinosaur were jungle-like, so it made complete sense. So he writes it in the review, and then I go to submit it, and I said, now we have to move this sentence up to the top. And Cole's like, no, Daddy, it goes here, where I wrote it. And of course, it was the last thing he wrote, but it was basically the beginning of the review. So I'm like, Cole, no, you have to sort of put them in the order that the things you saw. Oh, but Daddy, this is where I wrote it. This is where I thought of it. And I'm thinking, how do I, you know, because you just don't want to tell him what to do. You want him to understand. So the best, and he likes sports. So this is the best I came up with. I said, Cole, you know when we watch a baseball report on TV and they say what happened in the game? And they always start with the first inning and the second inning and the third inning, or the best play and then the second best play in that order, you know, how they happen in the game. Try to get him to understand the flow, the logical flow. And he got that. So then he completely was willing to put, when the lights went down, I felt like I was in the jungle, further up in the review. That was my little parenting experience there. All right. So thanks again for joining me. I have to thank our sponsor on The Inadequate Life, Karen Hartwick over at Tea Leaves. If you're in Stratford or if you want to go online to get some of her amazing tea, just go to tealeaves.com or stratfordtealeaves.com. But if you are heading out to Stratford, book a tea tasting or just drop in her place to experience the world's best, freshest, and most exotic loose leaf teas. Karen Hartwick, she's Canada's tea sommelier. An amazing assortment of teas she can get you. And if you have any special needs, you know, she has different teas for different medical properties. She'll help you with that. Just look her up on the website, stratfordtealeaves.com, and give her a call, and she'll send you the stuff in the mail. She does a ton of mail order business, actually. So, Anna Atkinson coming up. If you've seen her, if you've seen Jacques Brel's Alive and Well, or if you've seen The Grapes of Wrath or Fiddler on the Roof at Stratford, you've seen her on stage. In June 2011, Anna released her CD, Moonature. It was her debut CD, and there's some beautiful songs on it. I got to see her do some of those live, and it was at the top of the Toronto Star's anti-hit list, which is a really cool place to see what's going on musically, and it continues to get frequent airplay on CBC Radio. Interesting, one of the things that comes up is Anna had some serious anxiety with stage fright, which you'd never know to see her perform, because when she performs, she's just so full of joy and passion. But interesting story she has about how she overcame that. Anyway, thanks again for joining us. Here comes Anna Atkinson. So thanks for inviting me into your home to talk to you. I'm very appreciative of being here. Thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome. Very
cool space. I love the wood floors and the beautiful wood piano.
Yep.
And look at the amp and old. Is that old? An old PV amp?
It's a new PV amp, but it looks old. It has that tweed.
It does.
It's pink. A gorgeous amp.
It is a beautiful amp. Is that for you? Do you plug in?
Yeah. All of the instruments here, except for the piano, are mine. And I use the piano all the time.
That's fun.
But yeah, I have an electric guitar that I use a fair amount.
Now, so the folks who have seen you at Stratford,
They've
seen you in Jacques Brel is Alive and Well in Paris.
Yeah.
Grapes of Wrath.
Yeah.
Fiddler on the Roof.
Mm-hmm.
Am I missing anything?
I was also briefly appeared as a pirate in Pirates of Penzance.
Briefly appeared?
Yeah. Just the very top of the show.
Playing something?
Yeah, playing the fiddle, dressed as a man.
So talk about those three different opportunities. I didn't see The Grapes of Wrath. Talk about your role on them and how you sort of interpreted what your position was.
Yeah, well, Jacques Brel was my very first season at Stratford. I really didn't know what to expect, to be honest. I was starting out in Toronto as a freelance viola player, actually, and I sort of let it slip that I also played violin and had basically just started playing accordion in the last 3 years before that. And somehow word got out and Rick Fox was in need of some help. So
the musical director.
Yeah. The previous music director. And he called me and it was just about the time. I know we were talking a bit about Joe Jobs before.
Yeah.
It was about the time where I was like, you know, I really need to get a job.
Oh, so you were done with the civilian jobs.
Well, no. I had been cleaning houses for about close to a year before that. And then I realized that I couldn't do that anymore. And I thought I could make it as a freelancer. But I was really living hand to mouth.
Sure.
And I was really new in town. And I mean, it was a bit unrealistic to think that I was going to be like all of the sudden with no connections working all the time, but I was doing okay. But I was kind of, you know, it was winter. I was sort of thinking about the next year and I thought I really need to get a job. And then Rick Fox called and had me come in.
Was it through reputation as a studio musician?
My reputation as a freelancer, but mostly just because I was one of the only people that played those two particular instruments together.
Yeah.
And he had that in mind for Jacques Brel. So getting back to your question, I was supposed to perform on stage, or I did perform on stage in costume with my accordion and my violin. And there was some staging involved and some singing. And that was pretty exciting for me, because I had done a lot of theater actually as a kid, and then I got kind of disillusioned with the whole process for a bunch of different reasons. You know, community theater has it's wonderful, but it also has a lot of limitations.
Yeah, it can turn into a Christopher Guest movie very easily.
Yeah, and it was very frustrating for me, because I felt...
And you had been through the professional. Actually witnessed the professional process.
And I was like, this feels like a big waste of my time right now.
But it's interesting, but you didn't let it go.
Yeah.
You just recognized...
I think I also just socially, I felt way... I was a very shy kid, and I never really had a peer group per se when I was living in
club,
yeah, right? and living in Windsor and stuff. So I think I did find a lot more solidarity and a lot more ease interacting with other musicians. And I did play violin and I did sing. And I thought, you know, this feels right for now.
Seems to have worked out pretty well.
Yeah, and
so you're on stage, so you get cast.
So then I get cast
at Stratford
Festival. Yeah.
That's a pretty big deal.
So each season had sort of its own little set of challenges and its own little set of sort of personal, professional development areas that I got to work on. So by the time Fiddler came around, I was actually pretty comfortable moving around on stage. And, you know, I sort of conquered my fear of heights riding a 20-foot moving bridge in Pirates of Penzance. So by the time they asked me to, like, you know, stand on roofs and platforms and stuff, I was like, sure.
Right. Yeah, you're dancing. Because in Finland, you're dancing around the rooftops. That's right.
Yeah.
That was very beautiful. Yeah.
There's quite a lot involved.
It was very evocative.
And I guess part of it was that, I worked with Donna Fior.
Yeah, the choreographer.
Yeah. And neither of us really knew exactly how it was going to work. And she had her visions and I had my sort of ideas of what my limitations might be. But it was great because I feel like we both sort of worked together to figure out what could happen. And I really, you know, I had developed the ease to move and play at the same time. And you are thinking about 50 different things, you know, when you're moving around on a stage and there's blackouts and there's lighting. And
oh, yeah.
You're wearing
dark.
You're in silhouette.
From the audience point of view, it looked like the rooftops weren't necessarily that large for you to land on.
Yeah, right? Exactly. You have to be very
bouncing around agile.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's, I think probably like the trajectory of my time at Stratford was really about me learning to focus under all kinds of crazy circumstances. And I think that that's really like what any sort of performer or theater artist has to go through is just, you know, how do you center yourself when there are, you know, 30 different factors at play,
And just be in the moment. What was your first love of music?
You know, it's funny. Probably my first conscious thoughts were about how I needed to be a musician. My brother, who's 16 years older than me, I'm the youngest in a big family. When my mom was pregnant with me, he was practicing probably 6 hours of flute every day.
Wow.
In addition to, you know, everyone else in my family played something and we had a record player. We didn't have very many records. But
how many kids?
There were five.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. And
so your brother was practicing flute 6 hours a day.
Yeah. And then, I mean, he eventually quit because he kind of burnt out at that, but he played the piano all the time when I was a kid, like Beatles songs and, you know. Wow.
So did you say your first conscious thoughts were desiring to be a musician?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure I probably thought something else at some point, but I really, like, I remember from a very, very young age, just like, I knew I needed to do music. I didn't really know what that meant. I always would write songs. I'd always be coming up with melodies and stuff. So I think I knew I needed to write music. And
yeah.
When I was almost five, I started my first violin lessons.
Wow.
Yeah, it was great.
That's young.
Yeah, I took lessons with a woman named Ruth, and I remember really, loving music again. I didn't ever really love playing the violin when I was a kid. I found it mostly, it just like hurt my shoulder, and I was a bit complaining. I hated to practice. I was the worst. But I would just sort of go over my Suzuki pieces in my head. I took the bus to school. And it was fairly unpleasant. Did a lot of mental practicing. Huh.
In the bus time. And Suzuki. I looked into the Suzuki thing, and I understand that the parent has to go as well, or has to at least have an appreciation of the instrument.
Yeah. So I think at first my mom started alongside me, because that's part of the Suzuki thing, is that the parent and the child sort of learn together for the first little bit. And so my mom, who actually I think always wanted to play the violin.
Oh, that's perfect.
She played with me, and then eventually she stopped, but my dad sort of became like the person that took me to all my lessons.
Did your dad have music in his background?
Well, his family, both my parents sort of grew up in families that were too poor for music lessons, but they made that a priority for sure, for all of us. So we all got lessons of some sort growing
up.
My dad started playing banjo and guitar as an adult, actually. And he had a beautiful singing voice.
And just self-taught.
Yeah.
That's pretty... Isn't a banjo tough to play?
Well, he had the Pete Seeger book, and he went for it.
Classic back in the day.
I think he found it really fun. He was one of the founding members of the Folk Music Society in Windsor. And, you know, he passed away 9 years ago, but he sort of started that whole community, and it's a thriving community now.
Oh, that's cool. Wow.
And he used to host these song circles when I was a kid, and I used to get to stay up really late.
Those are amazing things, actually. Yeah.
And I was always a little reluctant to, like, he would always, you know, ask me to play my violin with him at the thing. And I did a few times, but I was, again, I was kind of shy. And it wasn't really my scene. It was more his. So
right.
I was like, yeah, no, it's fine. I always really loved classical music, and I always really loved pop music. But it went a little bit sort of into hiding, I guess, for a while, I think. Because I did think I was going to become a classical, strictly classical chamber music player, actually, for a long time. And I also tried to write sort of in the, like, classical avant-garde style as well a bit. And that's what initially I thought my major was going to be at university.
And what did you? So you went to University of Victoria, right?
Yeah.
In BC. And what did you major in?
I eventually majored in.
Eventually, I like that. Yeah. I was undeclared for 2 years.
I was always in the music department, but I really wasn't sure, you know, whether I wanted to be, like, my initial plan was to go and become a composer, and I was encouraged by one of my profs in Windsor that, you know, UVic was really the place for composition in Canada, in sort of the classical-ish genre. And it was great because I played actually a lot of music, but I wasn't really in writing mode for a lot of my degree. And I showed up as a violin player, but I ended up playing viola in a chamber ensemble because I played viola a little bit when I was a kid. And the violas are always in demand, I think. And the viola teacher, Joanna Hood, was like, you know, you should come study with me.
Forget the composition.
Yeah, forget the composition. You can compose later and forget the violin. You can play your violin later, but come study with me. And that was really like a huge shift for me because I think the major thing was that she really was like, you know, you really have something special.
Wow.
You're a very, very talented musician and you just have no idea what you're capable of, basically.
What was the teacher's name?
Joanna Hood.
And has she ever come to see you?
I mean, amazing. We keep in touch for sure.
Yeah.
Because the other thing was, backtracking a little bit, I studied voice for a few years in high school and classical voice, and I, you know, was doing really well, and I think, you know, my teacher was like, oh, you could have a career in this. But I really, again, I was hesitant about the whole classical world because I just, you know, that style of singing, it is amazing, but I didn't ever really feel like it was my voice. I felt like,
that's a pretty cool observation to know with that young, to realize
And I don't really know. Maybe part of it was motivated by fear of failure. I don't know that it was all like just me like having this great self-knowledge necessarily, but I think I just really wasn't sure. And that's such a crazy stream to go down, especially when you're that young, because the female voice doesn't actually reach maturity till they're 35. So, you know, there's still time for me if I want to become an opera singer.
That's hilarious. Oh, okay.
But
so you kind of were, you had all these teachers kind of saying you could do this or you could do that.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of it. I think, and part of their frustration with me was probably that I was a bit resistant to all of them.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Because I, like, again, part of it was this crazy performance anxiety that I had, you know, since adolescence. And part of it was
You didn't like to get up on stage.
Well, I loved to, but I would self-destruct.
Really?
Basically. Not when I was singing, but when I was playing violin. But I loved to play violin, and so I knew that this is kind of a backwards thing. But I always found singing really easy and performing singing. But when I would go on stage and play violin, I would just basically self-destruct. I would like lose control of my bow, not be able to really play anywhere near the best of my ability. And that was really shocking to me.
Was it so bad that the audience would know?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes. Like, or they'd be like, okay, she's all right,
right,
but she's not really that good.
Right.
And I knew that I was a very, very competent player. And I think that was so perplexing to me that I think it actually, like, forced, like, I think I was just like, I can't not play the violin because I lose control of my body when I perform. Like,
that's,
I need to, like,
amazing.
Make a...
Yeah, work on
I
it.
Need to feel like this is a choice. I don't want to feel like this is, like, me being pressured by...
Or some unconscious force taking over your body. And,
yeah.
Because then when the audience is gone and you're on your own, you're fine.
Yeah. Well,
so that's like sounds like a therapy kind of thing. Like,
well, you know what happened? I mean, I tried to work on it in therapy, but really what happened was, like, I mean, again, like whenever I would perform either my own music on stage or, you know, anything that was kind of relaxed, it would usually go pretty well. But it was really like getting hired at Stratford.
Because they didn't know. They didn't know you had the anxiety.
No. Well, and also like, yeah, I was like, I showed up in Toronto and I was like, I freaking need to get over this. Like, it got a little better over the years for sure. Like, but it was never comfortable performing. And what it really came down to was like, or what I've realized recently, actually quite recently, is that it really all comes down to breathing.
Mm.
And the thing about, well, the reason I could do it when I was singing is because you have to breathe in order to breathe. Yeah, exactly. And like, even if you're kind of quasi hyperventilating, at least you're breathing.
Yeah.
But when you're playing violin, it's actually possible that you could, you know.
Yeah. Well, you're thinking and you could actually stop breathing, and your body does strange things when you're not breathing.
So, working on a show like Jacques Brel, where it was extremely challenging parts technically, it was challenging in that I was playing accordion, which was also like not my most familiar instrument. It was challenging in that it's friggin' Stratford. Like, it's a huge deal. It's a really big, you know, for someone's first big gig.
It's the largest classical repertory theater in North America.
Yeah.
People, I just was on Twitter today. Someone from New Zealand. Well, it was definitely worth the trip. I've seen world-class productions. New Zealand.
I know. It was a huge deal.
That's pretty cool. So you kind of rose to the occasion.
Yeah, well, I just knew, like, I was like, I need to figure out how this is going.
Now, that's kind of a drag for your therapist. Like, you probably spent all this money. Yeah, you know what? It was the breathing. Maybe yoga. Did you do any yoga?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I started really going down a whole new path. And when I was in school, too, like, I had quite a few sort of difficult things that I went through during the course of my degree. Like, my dad passed away in my second year of university, and he had been sick for a few years prior to that. So, there were sort of, like, pretty huge stress factors during a time in my life where I think a lot of people are kind of figuring stuff out around the age of 20, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow, there's all this other stuff happening. And so I think maybe I was a little late to like figure out how to like be in the world.
I'm still trying to figure it out.
Well, yeah, I know. I think we all, you know, we all go through different transitions and different phases. And I think throughout all of this stuff, like there were like lots of sort of external obstacles to overcome. But I think the thing that I'm realizing more and more is that it was just sort of, you know, we're our own worst enemies usually.
Yeah, yeah.
And we really hold ourselves back from a lot of stuff. And we really, you know, what are we afraid of?
Yeah,
and
no, fear is a big one.
Asking those questions.
Fear is a big one. So we haven't talked about your own work. So we've talked about your work as in terms of composing your own music and writing your own songs. So the CD that's out now is called Moonature. Is that how you call it? Moonature?
That's
it's people online and in the reviews have talked about references to Joni Mitchell and Mary Margaret O'Hara and Lewis Carroll, which I like, and Tom Waits and Kurt Weill. And I found it very sensual because of all the you know, you've heard that, you're shaking your head like you've heard that before. Okay, good. And longing, you know. So tell me a bit about what was going on in your world and how you came together to put such a cohesive piece of work, you know.
Well, I mean, it's sort of, some of those songs I started writing as early as maybe when I was, you know, 18, 19, and yeah, I'd say it's sort of a bit of a snapshot of those years, sort of between 19 and 25. I was, you know, sort of living on my own for the first time. I had moved across the country. I moved to, I took a trip from Windsor to Vancouver for a bit, a couple times right after high school. And then I realized I really wanted to live on the West Coast. And so I was living on my own for the first time. And I really was resistant to the whole songwriting thing for a long time because I was like, I don't know if it's as a woman, maybe it is as a woman, like we impose a lot of limitations on ourselves and we think, you know, certainly in the classical music world, not just with women, but with everyone, it's like, oh, if you haven't like whatever released like a platinum album by the time you're 16, then you're not, you know, and I think I held myself back by a lot of that stuff. So it was sort of what would happen is I would kind of start to feel like I was losing my mind. And then I'd, you know, write a song, not even really because I wanted to, but just because I was like, I'm gonna freaking freak out. Oh my God. And here's a song. Whoa. Hey, I did that. And it was a bit of a treacherous process.
It can be. That doesn't sound like it's that.
Yeah. It was, and it wasn't pleasant, but I realized
and literally,
that.
So then you would, would it come to you and you'd actually stop what you were doing to write? Or would you just, you had the time of day, you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to, now it's time to get this off my.
It really depends. Sometimes, you know, I'd be walking home from my friend's house and I would just get an idea. And all of a sudden, it would just, you know, it's like these like little ideas or these little things present themselves regularly. And the onus is on you to kind of say, okay, and sort of invite that in. Mm-hmm. And then sort of, I don't know if it's like playing servant to the idea, mm-hmm. if that's the idea, you know, just welcoming whatever that kernel is. So, and I think like, especially as a beginning writer, and I mean I always wrote growing up, but I felt like these songs were written sort of in a really special way because it was sort of me coming back to it, and I had a lot more musical maturity than I did, you know, when I was 12, and a lot more sort of just general maturity. So yeah, there were a couple songs that I really labored over, but it was really this really, really important thing for me, sort of calling me back, I'd say, was this album. Like, especially now that I it's been 3 years since the release, and I've, you know, written many, many songs since then, I can sort of see those songs as a kind of little nuggets in this really special time for me.
And are you going to gather the next ones into an album? Is that the plan?
Yeah, that's the plan.
And you played almost all the instruments in the last album.
Yeah, I had two musicians come in, Andrew Downing, the wonderful Andrew Downing, playing cello and bass, and then Greg Samick, playing all sorts of percussion instruments. But yeah, I played, you know, violin, viola, accordion, piano, Wurlitzer organ.
Cinnamon, what is it called? A cinnamon day?
Days Like Cinnamon.
Days Like Cinnamon. I forget if that was a song, but there was it sounded like there was a string section, but it wasn't a string section. It was just an interesting arrangement of strings that you were playing.
Yeah, it was all me.
Yeah.
But, you know, not at the same time.
Yeah, no, I get that. The way you used the strings. Is that right? They were strings.
Yeah, they were strings.
That it sounded very unique and not something that I had heard before.
Yeah. The other person who was majorly involved in the record was Brent Bodrug, who was the producer. And he sort of produced and engineered and mixed the record and did a brilliant job. And so certain moments like that, we sort of pieced them together. It was a collaborative effort. That string arrangement at the end, you know, I'd say, oh, well, I want this. And he'd be like, well, how about this? Oh, I don't know. Then we'll try this. And so I like to joke that we kind of fought a lot. We didn't actually fight, but we sort of, you know, I think it was like our little miniature disagreements, or, you know, him trying to push me in a direction. And I think he was right too. But at the time I was kind of like, whoa, resistance. I don't know.
There's a theme
and it
there,
was great.
There?
Yeah, exactly. There's sort of this, throughout, you know, all of that process, it was about me like really embracing myself as an artist and also to not be so egocentric and so, possessive of my ideas and to, you know, I wouldn't call on people to make a record with me that I didn't want to influence the end result of the record.
Right.
But again, there's, I don't know exactly where it comes from, but there's sort of this rhetoric in creativity and in songwriting that, you know, there's like the poet that sits alone in their room and they, you know, they toil and stew and then they come out with this perfect gem. And now that you can actually have a home recording studio, you can do that now too. You can make a record from start to finish and not see
anybody.
Another soul. And where the creative process actually becomes really interesting is when you start involving other people.
Right.
And it's scary because all of a sudden your little precious ideas aren't your little precious ideas anymore.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
I mean, it never really is to begin with, but again, like if you're, you know, searching for an identity and searching for your place, you get pretty attached to your own ideas.
Oh yeah. So
Have you got, are you going to bring in some musicians on the next one?
Well, so yeah, so there's a couple collaborations I have on the go right now.
Oh, cool. So I saw the stuff with Michael Acapinti.
Or David
online.
David Acapinti.
Oh, David, I'm sorry, David Acapinti. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yes. Yeah. So that's one project. We actually did record some demos last month, and we're hoping to record an EP or an album hopefully in the near future. And we met again at one of my weird little freelance gigs. I was playing in an orchestra that was playing one of his pieces. And we just sort of were like, you know, you're cool. And I think I gave him a couple viola lessons actually. Wow. At the beginning of our friendship. And then eventually I asked him if he wanted to do a concert together, and he was just thrilled.
Oh, that's
and,
great. So you asked him. That's cool.
Yeah. Well, I think he sort of put the offer out there, but I was like, oh, David, he's so good. Like, he's not, he doesn't really want to play with me. He's just being polite.
Right.
But, and so it was, you know, this, the, I'd say like the last, well, the last 29 years, but it's certainly the last 5 years have been about me sort of realizing that, like, I do have something to offer, and I do have, like, you know, there's something going on that, that I shouldn't feel afraid of asking people that I think are good to play with me. But it took me a long time. I'm a very, I have been a very timid person in the past, and I'd say a lot of that is gone now, but,
That sounds like a step forward.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But so yeah, David
and
I,
just wait until someone says no.
Well, exactly. And I mean, you know, whatever, it'll happen. I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm also, you know, I've gotten a lot of rejection as well. I've gotten, you know, actually like a fair amount.
well, sure. No, that's,
and so it's like, and I'm learning to take that less personally too, because
you
know,
so many variables,
any person that you talk to, no matter who they are, no matter how high up on the echelon of whatever, they've had like crazy rejections.
Of course.
And so it's, I think I'm starting to just, maybe it's just growing up, is just having way more perspective. And then I have another band that I just started called Granis B.
G-R-A-N-I-S?
G-R-A-N-N-I-S.
Okay.
And then B-E-A.
Okay.
And that is a trio with a bassist and a drummer. And I'm currently playing sort of synthesizer at the moment.
Interesting.
But I'd say that it's sort of a, like, it kind of grooves pretty heavily, this music, and it's, but it's still, I'm writing most of the repertoire for it. But I like to say that, you know, I grew up in a household that played basically classical and folk music, but I lived like right next to the river that was right next to Motown.
Yeah, of course.
And
yeah.
The only time I really heard Motown was in my friend's dad's car, when we would like drive to the McDonald's and go through the drive-through and get 49-cent cones.
Yeah, and then on the radio.
And it would be on the radio, yeah, and I would be like, what the heck is this? And like, because I didn't really listen to, like, I listened to a lot of pop music, but I didn't listen to a lot of R&B. Listen to, like, but it was just there because, like, you know, I grew up next to Detroit and it's there. And I mean, it's just part of pop culture too. But I think, I was fairly resistant to the idea of drums and bass for a long time, to the point where I just, like, I really didn't understand their necessity when I was growing up. When I was, like, you know, 20 and starting to write music, I was like, ugh, drums and bass, what's the point of that? It's just loud and blah, blah, blah. And now it's great. Like, it's sort of my new obsession.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
So, yeah, so we just had our first show last week, and we're, yeah, I'm hoping to record with that band as well soon. So there's sort of two albums, sort of, and there's a couple other projects.
Drums and
on
bass.
The,
so yeah. Who are your drums and bass secret, like, passions? Who are you listening? Where are you finding the inspiration for drums and bass?
I'm pretty obsessed with, you know, bands like Portishead and, like, okay. I don't know. I went through like a pretty serious soul phase a couple years ago where I was, you know, listening to like tons of Aretha Otis Redding. And the thing is, I actually still, like, I have so much stuff left to discover. Things that groove really hard, things that you can dance to, things that you can.
So that's
and also the other aspect of this band is that it's very minimalistic.
Yeah.
So there's actually times where there's nothing happening and there's so much space because it's a trio.
Okay.
And I'm the only singer.
Yeah.
and I don't really play keyboards, so it's like I'm just filling in just chords with the synth. So it really is about drums, bass, and voice.
And when a song comes out, do you go, oh, this is better for me and Acapinti, or this
is
better for
actually,
me?
Yeah, that's what's happening now, actually, because I mean, this new band is very new, but I'm noticing, you know, I'm trying not to have too much overlap between projects and material. Which is great because I feel like I am writing a lot right now. And so it's not like I'm at a loss of material.
And when you write, do you write at the piano or where do you write?
Lately, it's been at the piano. Sometimes it's literally when I'm just like walking down the street.
Yeah.
I write a lot.
I was at a festival and Werner Herzog, the filmmaker, said to everyone, he said, if you want to make better films, go for walks. That's what he said. And
yeah,
it's amazing.
It's true.
I mean, I've had some experiences when I've been on a long walk and you come home and you've got this body of work or this tangible thing. You just got to make note of it. And then just nice to be in Toronto and walking around.
Yeah, you know? Walking and biking, I'd say. Oh,
biking too. Yeah.
I mean, biking too. In Toronto is a little
That's
bit
dangerous.
Treacherous. But I don't usually write when I'm biking in Toronto. But I do write a lot when I'm walking. And I certainly get a lot of ideas and I write a lot of lyrics when I'm walking. I would say if I had to characterize the way I'm writing versus for Munich, I'd say that in general it's more direct, a little less like embellished, and a little bit more there's actually sort of in general less material at play. I'd say but I don't think it's any less sort of evocative of those. I write with a lot of similar imagery, but yeah, I guess you'll just have to
hear it and find out. Very curious.
Yeah.
So then, and let's talk about a little bit about Rundles. You're doing the summer music series at Rundles, which is brunch. I was there last year.
Yeah.
And it's a great thing because it's a beautiful restaurant.
Yeah.
With the nice, you know, and then we went for the morning and it was food is good. It's an intimate. Now, I was worried when you were talking about performance anxiety. We're right in your face there.
Yeah. No, I really am. Yeah. And to be honest, like performing that kind of stuff, like my own music for sure, that's just never really been a huge issue.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that.
Yeah. But I actually really love intimate venues.
Oh, cool! All right.
Yeah, I've played a lot of house concerts and a lot of small rooms. And
there's themes, right, on the summer music.
Yeah.
Fest, on the Stratford Summer Music site, there's a theme for each particular Sunday.
Yeah. So you know, there's probably going to be one week that is a little bit more geared towards, you know, the type of music I heard growing up at home. So there will probably be some Pete Seeger covers. Maybe I'll bring my banjo. I don't play my banjo in public that often, so that could be interesting.
Yeah.
So there'll be some folk music. There'll be, you know, songs that I wrote during that period, maybe. I might pull some things out of the vault.
Yeah. And is there a day for this people who saw you at Stratford who wanted like a bit of a bit from each of the shows you've been in?
Yeah, it's possible. I'm thinking of learning a Jacques Brel song.
Wow.
In fact.
Okay.
It's mostly just like, which one? There's so many amazing ones. It's possible if people want, I might play a little bit from Fiddler. But I think I'm mostly going to be, focusing on, you know, my writing.
Right.
Because that's really like, I mean, the neat thing about this series is that I do get the occasion to showcase sort of all of the different things that I do, which doesn't happen very often. I feel sometimes I like, you know, I'll come home from one gig and I'll have like my accordion and my banjo and then I'll like rush out and I'll be like singing backups on something for, you know, and it's like every day is different. And it's, I think I have a fairly unique sort of career because of how sort of widespread it is.
Mm-hmm.
So this series sort of gives me a chance to tie everything together and,
have a
bit of cohesiveness.
Yeah, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. So we get the full perspective, but every Sunday is different. So
yeah, Saturday and Sunday.
Saturday and Sunday. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, every weekend is different.
Hey, you're good.
Yeah, thinking, you know, don't come just on Sunday.
That's right. I think that's the day of the week I went. All right, that's cool. So we'll watch. Well, that's in the summer here. And
yeah.
Then after that, maybe we'll watch for one of the CDs to come out.
Yeah, I'm really hoping it for soon. It's
good.
I'm sort of in the process of organizing that.
You've got stuff on SoundCloud, eh?
A little bit, yeah.
That's interesting. So SoundCloud, for the folks that don't know, so your music is on iTunes, so people have to go to iTunes and purchase it, but you can listen to it in their entirety on SoundCloud.
I've been lucky. A lot of people have sent me notes saying, you know, I heard your stuff on whatever, YouTube.
Yeah, it's YouTube as well, absolutely.
Whatever, and then I just bought your album on iTunes.
That's it. And that's the goal.
Yeah, it's even better if they just buy it from me because you make very little money from an iTunes sale.
So for you, is it CD Baby, or what's the best way for the money to go right to you, or do you have a website?
I have it on my website. Okay. But if you like, that's for physical copies. You can actually order a physical copy of my album and I will mail it to your house.
That's pretty nice.
You know, and if you send me a note and ask me to sign it, I'll sign it and then send it in the mail.
Sweet. All right.
So yeah, you know, just for anybody that wants, you know, for an artist like me, like, you know, playing live shows, and, you know, I recently licensed two of my songs to a movie score.
Wow. Congrats.
And I also composed the rest of the movie score.
That's exciting.
So those are sorts of things. In a way, like, people call CDs, you know, just expensive, fancy business cards.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah. It's sort of a means to other stuff. I mean, obviously, making the recorded music is the important part, and then it's sort of,
it all spins out from,
it all spins out from there.
SoundCloud gives folks and people a chance to actually listen to a song in its entirety, exactly as it is.
And then
on
you
the
can
album.
You know, and it and it's on other streaming sites like RDO and other things like that. You know, where maybe I see a fraction of a cent or something like that, but at least, you know, again, it's generating
something. So what's the website, your website?
Oh, my website, it's just annaatkinson.ca.
Okay, there you go, that's easy. And then order something, say please sign it to Bob.
Just send me a note. I also have a mailing list that I probably send out stuff to like once every 2 or 3 months. Like,
nice.
It's not
okay.
I should be better about it, but at least if you want to, you know, be kept up to date on, you know, my new album, for example.
Yeah, when it's coming out.
So join my mailing list. I'll send you a nice note.
All right, thanks so much, and we'll see you, hopefully, well, get on the mailing list so we know when the CD comes out.
Yes, indeed.
And when we can see you in concert.
Yep.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you so much, Anna.
Thank you, Keith.
Okay. Yay. Hey, there you go, Anna Atkinson. If you liked Anna's stuff, you can check her out at annaatkinson.ca, annaatkinson.ca, just how it sounds. And she's on iTunes as well, but she did mention if you're going to buy some of her songs, buy them off her website. And she'll even sign the CD for you if you like. She's so cool. Thanks, Anna, again, for inviting me into your home. I have left the building. Also, if you want, go to theinadequatelife.com. That's the website for this podcast, theinadequatelife.com. I've always got show notes with information about the artist and things we talk about in the show, like the link to musical brunches at Rundle's. If you're going to be near Stratford, or even if it's an hour drive, it's worth it on a Sunday morning. It's such a beautiful, beautiful way to begin the day, Saturday or Sunday, till August 24th, musical brunches at Rundle's, part of the Stratford Summer Music Festival. Finally, if you're interested, I hate to ask this, but I feel like, you know, a street performer, you want to throw a couple of shekels my way to help support the podcast, I'd love that. You can do it on theinadequatelife.com. Any donation is much appreciated. I just bought this new recorder, the Zoom H6. Cost me a lot of money, but I think it's much better. It gives me many more options for recording, and I'll get to do some interviews with three people. I'm going to be interviewing an actor, his mother. The three of us are going to talk. He's an actor. He's new to Stratford this year. His mother is amazing. She's lots of fun on Twitter. I'm not going to tell you who it is yet, but that's coming up. But if you want to throw a couple of shekels my way to help support the podcast, I'd love it. You can anything you like is great. If you want to give an amount over $30 or $30, you can get some tea. Karen Hartwick, the sponsor. Yes, Karen Hartwick, Stratford Tea Leaves, has offered to give a special little package of tea. I have one right here, actually, in one of these beautiful aluminum foil envelopes that she'll mail to you. That's $30, and you get that delivered right to your door. Anyway, it's Keith Tomasek. See you again next time on The Inadequate Life.